The Volume.
Jenkins and Jones is brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any other fantasy sport, there's a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win. We're excited to have on our special guest for this episode. You know him from The Daily Show. You know him from stand-up specials. You're soon to know him from movies. He's got podcasts. He's doing everything. You know, Twitter, the legend, Roy Wood Jr. Roy, thanks for coming on the show, man.
I appreciate y'all for having me. Always a pleasure to be in the building with professional podcasters out here podcasting. Even if a nigga's got a North Carolina A&T motherfucking scarf on the wall, I'm not even going to take offense to it.
As a Florida A&M rat. You already know. It is what it is. That's what I was going to say. I know it's MEAC love. Y'all still in the MEAC now? Because we in the motherfucking, we in it. Where y'all going?
Good luck with wherever the fuck y'all going. We are headed to the SWAC, which will now be the super conference of all blackness.
Yeah, y'all still with black folk. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Y'all still with black folk. Y'all with Grambling and Southern. They putting us with the fucking Gardner Webb and shit, bro. I don't give a fuck about that conference, man. I hate that shit.
They going to kick y'all out of this shit. Y'all going to beat all them white folks at all they sports. Start changing rules like Simone Biles and Suri Abonale. Like, you can't do that shit no more.
For sure. But shouts to fam. My brother went to fam for 2 years and dropped out to say
it's all good. It's all good. We still claim him as an alumni, same way we do Common. It's all love.
Yeah, man. Yeah, but yeah, so I know you got some things going on. You know, you mentioned we're professional podcasters, which we absolutely are not. We might be getting paid for this shit. We still don't know what the fuck we're doing half the time. I know you kicked off, you know, a pod recently. So how's that
going? It's been going good, man. Roy's Job Fair is the name of it. All we're doing is giving a place. It's a forum for, you know, regular everyday folks to just come on, talk shit about old jobs you had or tell us about pivots that you're making. And then we also talk to people that are hiring in particular fields and job. It's literally like a job fair. It's places to get job tips on how to better yourself or to get the inspiration, you know, to dip into a different career. What's wild is how this shit came about. So during the shutdown, I had a partner. I can't say what state, but I got a partner. His job, he was a lobbyist for the marijuana industry. And his job was to basically take out politicians and schmooze them on trying to get weed legalized in this particular state. Just, hey, motherfucker, let's go down to Ruth Chris and eat $200 worth of food while I try to wind it. And then the shutdown hit. There was no restaurants. Every politician in this state is old as fuck, so they all at risk. They scared. And this nigga pivoted and became a gospel singer. And I'm like,
the fuck?
That's what I said. I was like,
what the
how
fuck?
You go from fucking, hey, baby, you know weed is good for the Jesus, you're the center of my joy. And so if he was thinking that and that was eating at him and the fact he had the courage to go and do that, there's got to be other people with similar stories. So, you know, on the other side of that, we put goofy, fun shit and talk shit about your old boss. But the real core of it is just thinking about what your purpose is in life. And if you're already chasing it down, then laugh with folks that are doing the same thing. But if you're not, it's also a place, hopefully, where you get a little bit just of a push. I mean, we ain't monster.com, nigga. You ain't going to come on my job fair and find your career tomorrow. But you will find better understanding of what a lot of other people go through in the day-to-day. Because when you look at the things that connect us, every day you're trying to figure out you need to eat. You need to fucking feel some level of connection with someone, love. You need to bust a nut, whatever. And you need to figure out a way to provide. Everybody has, right down to fucking animals. You need something to eat, you need to mate, and you got to go fucking get the fucking, how to provide. You need housing. Like, so I think that employment connects us a lot more than we think across the board, across all demographics, than we're willing to acknowledge. So that's where the podcast came from, man. I found out on the pod, man, did you know that if you're a mail carrier, you still have to deliver mail to crack houses. Like, I didn't know. First off, I didn't even know people mailing shit to the crack house. I don't know what certified letter. Like, someone has to come to the door and sign for it.
Right. At least in Long Beach, mail carrier, that's like a super blue-collar position. And, it, like, I have a bunch of friends that are that work for the Postal Service here. And they have the best stories, like, other than people who tour for a living, whether that's, like, athletes or comedians or whatever. The people who work for the Postal Service have the craziest fucking stories.
Dog, seeing America by foot is one of the most intimate experiences you will ever have with this country. And postal workers have that shit, man. So, yeah, it's been wild to just find out just weird shit. Like, you knock on the door of an active crack house with a certified letter that somebody has to sign for. And you can't not attempt the delivery. Because it's the post office. No rain, nor sleet, nor crack rock will stop us, or whatever the fuck the phrase is. You know what I'm talking about.
So my lady is a big fan. You've actually validated me in my household. She'll actually listen to this podcast, you know, because of her, you're our Obama. She didn't know who the fuck any of our other guests were. You know what I mean? She's like, oh, cute, baby. Tap me on my ass and, you know, go get them. You know what I mean? But you interviewed Obama. I don't know how the fuck you got here after that. I wanted to know, what was that experience interviewing Obama personally?
Yeah.
And were there nerves? You know,
the Secret Service should have retroactively shut that interview down, knowing that you would one day end up on this podcast. Right.
Yeah, you're at the crack house now. This is the crack house. You're dropping the episode off at the crack house now. You know, from the White House to the crack house.
I'm sure they vetted everything that I did. Yo, you should have seen my Twitter, like, the 2 weeks leading up to when they were considering whether or not I would get to interview Obama. There was a Father's Day panel for Fatherly.com and the dad. And we're talking to Obama about father. He and I talk about fatherhood and the peril. What was it like being a dad while also finding Bin Laden? Like, just how do you juggle as a fucking literally the busiest dad on earth? And then we started talking about other dads. So then there was, and I only knew this because the Daily Show went to the White House. Well, Trevor went to the White House, and I was amongst the people who got to go with Trevor to the White House. When Trevor interviewed Obama, I think 2015, 2016, that was a month of clearances of just, you know, nigga, who is you? Where you from? Who your people is? And, you know, I got popped when I was 19 for stealing jeans. So that's forever in the back of my head. Cross colors and Tommy. My plug worked in Tommy Girl. So we would buy Tommy Girl in bulk, then bring it back to the store piecemeal for store credit to get the stuff we actually. I can break down the hustle. I don't know if the statute of limitations. Anyway. So there was a long clearance period for that. So then when this came up and they're like, hey, do you want to moderate a panel? We want to throw your name in the hat for the Obama fucking blah, blah, blah. I was like, sure. Motherfucker, I went on my Twitter that night. I cleaned up the last 3 months of ignorant shit. And, you know, my Instagram is pretty docile. My Instagram is probably a better representation of who I am. Twitter, you know how I tweet some nights at 2 a.m. It's a little ignorant.
Wild West out there.
Man, I went through that shit, deleting shit. I ain't cleaned up my Twitter like that since I got hired for The Daily Show. Like, that was like, that part of it was wild. But then, like, in actually talking to him, like, the orders were very simple. Don't steer this conversation off into no wild shit. We here to talk about fatherhood. And to me, that was enough. So, you know, it was an honor to be able to sit with the dude and to be chosen to have, you know, to be able to talk, because the decision didn't come from the people at Fatherly and the dad. The decision came from the president's side. Like, they had ultimate final approval, and they looked at who was on the list, and like, that one. Like, if you look, bro, on my IG, that's why, if you go back a little bit in my IG from a couple months ago, I, like, posted a picture of my son and shit. Like, that was me subliminally communicating with Obama's people. I don't post my child a lot. Like, niggas know I have a child, but I don't be posting them every week. Hey, look at my son. Fatherhood. Man, I played that shit up so hard.
Was it the picture you had of you like I think you're on a PSP or something when he was first born and then you cradled him up again? It was that picture? Yeah, I know exactly what picture you got. That shit was hilarious, man.
Yeah, the day my son was born, so my girl had a long labor or whatever. Like, it was one of those, she wasn't even supposed to have the baby for another week, but it was one of them, all right, you're in labor, but you're a week early, so we don't know when the baby gonna come. So, you know, I just started Daily Show. I probably only been there a couple months. So I fly out to San Francisco, and I told Trevor, I'm like, yeah, I'm go meet my son real quick. I'll figure out how to move him to New York later. Anyway, nigga, let me get 2 days off real quick. You know, they say this shit is special, so let me see what this having a child shit hitting on. And so, let's see what this shit talking about. And so I get to my kid, and all I did, bro, was play MLB The Show on PlayStation Vita, like in between her contractions, like when the contractions were like 2 hours apart and she would go to sleep, I'm like, oh, let me play a little bit of the game. And so then when my son was born, it's beautiful, but newborn sleep, bro, them motherfuckers be sleep. He would sleep like 6 hours. And there was some nigga who saw that picture and took it and put it on his fucking IG. Put it on his IG story like a fucking coward. Don't be this man. As if to suggest that you have this newborn, beautiful life. Why would you dare be playing a game? Motherfucker, when that picture was taken, he'd been asleep 4 hours. Fuck him. I was holding him. He was beautiful as is. But also, I'm in the playoffs with the Cubs. Jake Arrieta's hot right now.
it was a beautiful thing. Waiting around in that process than people understand until you've been through the fucking 18-hour labor and the kid sleeps for the first week that they're alive. 100%, everyone's playing video games.
And so what was wild about it is that because it took a week for my son to come, those 3-4 days that I thought, because you know when you get the call, you're like, oh, it'll be 2 days. I get to the hospital on like a Monday. My boy wasn't born until like a Sunday. Meanwhile, it's the middle of an election year and a job that I just got that could literally change my career. So, you know, my son was born and I was probably there for like another 2 days. And then I had to go back to work because that job became the ultimate insurance in being able to be a provider. And like, ultimately what you don't want as a dad is to always have to choose between being a father and being a provider. But at that time, in that moment, I need to go provide because, oh my God, this is gonna cost a lot of goddamn money. Like when you're in the hospital and you just see them wheeling in machines, and now we're gonna do this. They don't ever tell you none of the prices.
With a squeaky wheel, you know, like everything they wheel in.
Oh, they hooking my boy up to all types of shit, and I'm like, okay, like they ain't brought you no menu. You don't know what this shit costs. What the fuck? Oh yeah, it's this. I'm like, I need to go back to work. I'm going to come back and check on y'all in a week.
Our son was in the NICU for a week after he was born. And the final bill they sent us, we got health insurance, so I'm able to still afford to breathe and talk to you right now. It was $262,000.
Why do they do that? Why do they show you what they could have fucked you with? Just tell me the final price.
To scare the fucking shit out of you.
Yeah, scare the fuck out you. Like, you better keep that job with those fucking benefits, motherfucker.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that shit is.
Yeah, that shit is shade, bro. It's very shady.
We paid the deductible, which we had shitty insurance, so it was more money that we put Benson on the credit card. You know, I mean, we fucking at 20% interest or whatever. We fucking figured it out.
That's so wild. Fuck capital. You got to put a kid on a payment plan, man. Fuck capitalism, bro. Right. All those little socialist motherfuckers on Twitter are right. This shit got to go, dog. What the fuck? Payment plan for a newborn. God damn.
That shit is wild, man. I found out about The Daily Show and my girl's pregnancy within like 2 or 3 weeks of each other. So it was like, and then when you start a show like The Daily Show, you know, a lot of, you know, nobody talks about this shit with late night, but when you're new in late night, whether you're a writer or a correspondent or whatever the fuck you're on camera, anybody other than the host, you get a 4-month contract. You get 4 months to prove whether or not it's like the, it's like a 12-day, what's it, NBA? So, 10-day?
Yeah, 10-day contract. That's what I was about to say. Yeah, it sounds like a 10-day
contract. It's a 10-day contract. And if you ball out, then you get stability. Then you get to breathe. So, you know, there's always this idea, like I've heard of people taking like retro paternity leave and shit, like now that we're having that conversation as a country. And I might low-key go and come back and go and get them, go on, let me go and get that 3 months of paternity about you, Trevor, because when I got hired, you know, I kind of mistimed that pregnancy right up against a election and Trump and Hillary and really wanted to be there for you, brother. But now that Joe Biden's in office, I think I can kick back.
See, that's so wild. I never knew that because, you know, I was going to say, like, you know, of course, you know, everyone knows the grind that comedians have. And Daily Show was when you popped up on a lot of people's radar, popped up on my radar on Daily Show. Like, and I think that a Daily Show gig, that is like a comedian, quote unquote, making it. And you're like, nah, motherfucker, that's just the tryouts for real. You know what I'm saying? That's the final cut. That's wild. So like, how did it feel knowing that, yo, I got to nail this shit because I got another mouth to feed?
That, I don't know, I'm better under pressure. Just generally speaking, I'm better at the last minute. I'm a procrastinator. I'm better in the fourth quarter. You put my back against the wall, I just figure it out, because I will say it, and I've said it truthfully. You know, my son has probably been the best motivator for me career-wise, because it snatches the safety net from underneath you of complete. Like, I was fine. I was living comfortably without a child. Like, yeah, you and me, we together, all right, yeah. Oh, shit, baby? Okay. Let me start doing the math. And then them jokes started getting more precise. And then you started picking dates that are actually, road dates that are actually beneficial to your craft. And so, you know, until they moved to New York when he was like 5 or 6 months old, you know, I was doing a lot more West Coast swings. So now it's, all right, well, I only have 3 days to do this, this, and this, so this joke has to be good because I need to get rebooked here next year to get ready for the hour special, so I can't fuck off this year at this club, where that might have been a club where, yeah, it's a fun time, but I go out and drink. No, I'm going home, I'm listening to audio, and I'm tightening up these bits, and I'm coming back tomorrow, and I'm trying out 10 new minutes in the middle of the set, and then I'm listening to audio between shows. Hey, man, we in the green room. Can we come backstage and hang out? Nah, dog, I got shit to do. And so that shift started happening, and it's made me extremely more efficient. You know, I just think that when there's pressure involved, you know, things, I don't know, you change. It just changes you a little bit.
When did you really know that you could do this and make money? It seems really hard to be a comedian. You're bearing your soul in front of the entire planet. You know what I mean? And there's no guarantee where that goes. When did you know, what made you want to do this? And when did you know that I could definitely do this? I can make money doing it.
I got lucky, bro. Well, I'll answer the back half of that first. So I don't really care much about people's opinions of me or not liking me. Mm-hmm. So 2010, Last Comic Standing, season 7. This was 2010 was a very interesting year on Twitter, because that was kind of the beginning of the concept of live tweeting and this idea of establishing a hashtag. It's, you wouldn't even think twice about it now, but you know, 10, 12 years ago, that was new to be on a show and to actively have conversations with people on the internet. So NBC made all of the comedians that were in the finals, in the top 10. NBC made all the comedians that were in the top 10 of Last Comic Standing live tweet every Monday night under the Last Comic Standing hashtag or whatever the fuck the LC. I don't remember the hashtag. So in real time, every Monday night while the episode is airing, you're seeing people say horrible shit about your stand-up. Like, just motherfucker ain't funny, racism. Now, within there are supportive, ha ha ha, I love this. And those are the tweets you're supposed to single out and reply to and engage the fan. But contractually, we had to do that shit. Mm-hmm. And you had to read the worst fucking shit about you every fucking Monday night, bro. Then 3 hours later, the fucking West Coast feed runs. So now you got to do it again for the West Coast. So that goes on for 2.5 months because I made it all the way to the finale and got third place. So for 2.5 months, every Monday night, I read the most horrible shit said about me. And by the end of it, I was like, oh, these people are just angry and they just need a release. And I'm just the person that they released on that day. It's not a big deal. And internet hate has never bothered me since. It's never bothered me since. It did before that, you know, with like YouTube comments, you know, when I used to do the prank calls way back in the day, you know, it'd be some people that had opinions about that. And that used to fuck with me a little bit. But that run of live tweeting that summer in 2010, it changed everything. I'm so carefree on the internet, bro. I don't even block niggas on Twitter. I don't. It literally can't bother me. The only thing I fuck with, the only thing I take seriously is death threats. But even that, that just depends on it. Like, it has to be a very specific Daily Show piece that will bother. So to the point of bearing my soul, I don't give a fuck. I'll say whatever. And if you don't like it, that's fine. You can thumb down my videos. Every now and then, though, just to be an asshole, somebody will say some slick shit. Somebody will say some slick shit. I am petty. You know, I'm insensitive.
Yeah.
You know, I might not be sensitive, but I am petty. Somebody will say some slick shit. You motherfucker got a YouTube channel? Well, I got a burner. And I'm going to go through and I'm going to talk shit. And I'm going to say, because here's the thing. This is the other thing that I learned when it comes to insults on the internet. The quick shit doesn't bother people. You ain't funny. You ugly. Nigga, you fat. You look like Martin Luther King. All right. Whatever. But when you leave specific.
Martin Luther King.
Yeah. That
That's a good
one.
Yeah.
Can't even mad at that.
I'm
one,
not
though.
Mad at it. I'm like,
you got a low key laugh. You know?
That's all in the like, game. That's all in the game.
Right.
But the way you really touch somebody's fucking self esteem and their soul is a full blooded critique and analysis of why what they did didn't hit the mark, because that will make them question their fucking goals every morning. Now that shit I'll do sometimes.
That sounds diabolical.
I'll do that.
This nigga is sinister.
Right. Tyler's petty, bro.
That's,
you're not just petty, dog.
No, that's fair.
You're the Joker.
That's fair. You're throwing fair. Negativity at me and you're also a content creator? All right then, bitch nigga. Watch this. We're going to see if you are strong.
Butt, nigga.
Because
show these butt niggas one time it
what
is.
I'm doing is attempting to convert you into a purveyor of positivity by touching your soul with a sword far sharper than the one you pulled on me. And also in a public forum so that other people can upvote it.
So you're a sports fan. That's why you're listening. But if you're considering getting in on the fun of sports gambling, I want to let you know about a great resource, the Action Network. The Action Network is where fans go when they're ready to bet smarter and turn a profit betting on sports. In fact, their free Action Network app was recently named the best app in sports betting. With the Action app, you can see the latest picks and articles from Action Network gambling experts, as well as personalities like Colin Cowherd. You can compare odds from different sports books and track every bet you make so you always know how your picks are doing. So if the game means more to you, download the free Action Network app and start betting smarter. You know those hot takes you post on social media? Well, now you can win up to $5,000 when you put those takes to the test on FanDuel. It's a new game called Over Under, and it's absolutely free to play on FanDuel. Here's how it works. FanDuel will set lines on things like total points or three-pointers made during every NBA on TNT broadcast. All you have to do is pick over or under for every prop. Your picks could win you a share of $5,000 during every contest. FanDuel is the exclusive home for over-under, and it's available in all 50 states so you can play from anywhere. All you have to do is go to FanDuel.com/over-under and sign up now if you haven't done so already. Just create a new FanDuel account. If you don't already have one, it takes less than 2 minutes to sign up. Then put your takes to the test during every NBA on TNT broadcast at FanDuel.com/over-under. It could be worth up to $5,000. Age and local restrictions apply. See FanDuel.com for terms and conditions.
I have a question relating to positivity. The first time we interacted, it was due to my exercise post when I thought I was sharing something interesting with people. I was literally shocked by the answer, by the reaction.
Okay, hold on. For people who are, for Roy's people who have not listened to this podcast and heard us roast John for this, John posted that he'd done, what's it called, a Murphy?
I just called it a Murph, but I'm a nigga, though.
Mile and a bunch of fucking pull-ups and squats and push-ups and shit, and then another mile.
It was
mile.
An ungodly amount of strongman.
Yeah.
Let me read this to give everyone the proper context. I'm gonna say this shit first. I'm a nigga. I don't watch CrossFit. I don't know what the fuck a Murph is. My trainer asked me to do it, and I'm dumb. I'll say that when it comes to shit like that, and be like, okay, fuck it, let's see. But I didn't know what a fucking Murph was or none of that shit. I tried it. But go ahead, Tyler. Say what you got to say.
This is not about you not being locked into the cross-training world. This is about you not having a grasp on the capabilities of the average human. That's what this is about. All right, I'm going to read the tweet now. If you want to be stupid like me, please try this.
Like 30.
Took the finish. Beat my whole ass. Okay, and these are the exercises he did. Mile run. 100 pull-ups. 200 push-ups, 300 body weight squats, and then another mile run in 30 minutes.
All right, it was 38 minutes. But I said, I'm stupid. I said I'm stupid in the tweet. You know what I'm saying? And I said it beat my fucking ass. So I was admitting. My question is this.
That's fair. So you went.
How should I have approached that?
The idea is that. Here's where it came across as. It came across as a humble brag because you completed it. So to the average out of shape nigga like myself, you're doing things that I can never do. And I know that it beat your ass, but in my eyes, you completed it. So to me, you're crazy because I could never fathom doing that many things in a month. And you did them all in under an hour, under 40 minutes. You're talking to a nigga right now that runs like a 12-minute mile last I timed. So off the top, that's 24 minutes of the 38. And you did another 400 reps of activities. Which, with the time left, we just do.
Nigga, time like, this is silly ass nigga.
No, but I'm just saying, bro, like that's where the shock was like, oh, you're crazy. Why would you do that to yourself? In the heat.
We told him it's because, like, you brought time into it. You know what I mean? Like, if you'd have said, wow, feeling really accomplished today, I did all this shit today, but you're like, in about 30 minutes.
30 minutes. But I am 100 pull-ups, bro. I am comfortable saying I will not do 100 total pull-ups from now until the day that I die. I would wager money on that, bro. And you did that shit in 38 minutes.
Here's what you have to remember about hate, though. Hate, more often than not, is people not being happy with their own self. So rather than applaud you, as we should have, on your journey, because here's the thing. If you'd posted a picture of yourself out of shape, if you'd posted a picture of yourself out of shape with that same fucking, with that same tweet, and you just post a picture of yourself out of shape and go, I used to be this, but today, I did 8 miles. Motherfuckers would have applauded you. It had 8,000 retweets, and people would have been asking you to come on their fitness podcast. and talk about your fucking journey through fucking weight loss. But because you just said, man, I did all this shit. It was like, well, fuck him.
I was really like, hey, try some dumb shit with me. I didn't know it was a thing that people did. And he was like, nigga, are you joining the war, nigga? Like, is there apocalypse coming? Let me know so I can prepare myself.
That too. Was my reply like, to you, was like, when do you get deployed?
That's right. Yeah, that...
What's funny about that is I thought about joining the military. Like, I just thought about it as my freshman year of college. And my mom was like, bro, we ain't going to war to fight for the white man. Not no damn Bush out here.
My
family is anti that. It was like, take your ass to college. You feel me?
So my father,
dog, I didn't know that was a big deal.
My father was an embedded reporter with black platoons in Vietnam. Like, he volunteered to go to Vietnam to see the racism they were experiencing up close, which I think is some wild shit. But, you know, he's a journalist, yeah. And, you know, to be a black journalist in the 60s, whatever you were covering was going to be dangerous if it was about black people. So he wasn't very keen on the military. My mom was indifferent. There was a lady. How can I tell this story tactfully? My next door neighbor side chick came to fight his wife. Just a regular summer day in Birmingham, and this woman pulled up to the house to fight Miss Murray over her husband. The woman that pulled up to the house was in full, this is like 92, 93, like the nigga just got back from Desert Storm. Like, she had the rucksack and a car. Like, she came straight from the airport, straight first day of leave. She came to fight this woman over her man or whatever. And Miss Murray fucking dish rag this fucking United States veteran, fucking drug her across the fucking front. Yeah, like one of them fights where niggas is tooting the horn as they pass by, which is like the 93 equivalent of yelling world star. Like, right. So, and so when I went to consider enlisting, and I was in high school ROTC. I did Boy Scouts all the way through ROTC. I like all that adventure, forest, jungle shit. And then when I really sat and thought about the 4-year active, 4-year reserve commitment I was making, and would I really learn anything? And all I could think about was Miss Murray beating that woman ass in her full Class A uniform. Medals flying. You earned these fucking medals fighting Iraqis and shit, and just got snatched up out of fucking medals. And like, that's my image of the army, you know, is that woman. That woman getting her ass beat. And I was like, I can't.
Strongest military in the world.
That's a tough hit for the brand, for sure.
She, if it hadn't have been in uniform, I'd have been all right with it. But she got whooped in uniform, bro. Like, you fresh from fighting. So, like, for all the shit my dad told me about the black man and a white man's army, all that, that didn't do shit. I was still thinking about it. But when I saw that woman, I said, man, I ain't gonna learn nothing. She couldn't beat Miss Murray. Like,
she put that outfit on that day knowing she was going to go to fight Miss Murray and got her ass beat. Like, you lacing them big ass boots up and got your ass dragged.
I said, fam, let me take my ass to college and go and get me some fucking.
That's what my mom told me, bro.
And I think that's kind of, you know, what's wild about it is that, you know, it's crazy how certain choices can influence, you know, the butterfly effect of whatever. Because I do think in hindsight, what I definitely needed was discipline. You know, I didn't have a lot of that. You know, my pops died when I was 16. He was in and out the house to begin with. You know, he was a good father. He wasn't the best husband, but, you know, there was enough of a presence. But when you lose your pops at 16, there's still a stretch from 16 to 25 where that is your dumbest period as a man, I believe. If you can get on the other side of 25, then you're out of trouble. Your stupidity starts to subside a little bit. And so 16 was peak dumbass for me. And so by the time I got to college, my mom's still in Birmingham. My fuck, I'm down in Tallahassee. we wilding the fuck out. And so that's when, like, the thing that's interesting about college, like, socially to me, is that if you go to college out of state, you have an opportunity to get a new identity. You know, you can literally conjure up whatever persona you want. And so to go from a kid who, I was never in the same school system more than 2 years until high school. So there's always kind of this outsider kind of mentality that I've always carried. And, you know, I had friends in high school and shit, and we were cool. But college was the first time I felt like I immediately fit in. And the plug was being able to, I was the plug on getting fresh clothes. So if I can steal these clothes, if I can run credit cards and steal clothes, then that gives me access to people. And so you don't even think about the repercussions of shit like that. And so, you know, 2 years in, the shit hits the fan, you lose all your friends. And comedy was the one thing that I'd always thought about doing. And I was like, you know, well, I'm finna go to prison. Fuck it. Get this shit a try. That, like, straight up, I had a court-appointed attorney, bro. And this nigga is like, yeah, man, it's January. Get your affairs in order. You're facing 5. You'll probably get 3. You'll probably do a year and a half with good behavior. You're a young man with no priors. You're in college. You have a job. This should all work towards you in sentencing. So from January to June, my sentencing was in June. I took the plea in January. So from January to June, I'm suspended from school. FAMU sends me a letter. Hey, nigga, don't come on campus. See, get the, I don't remember the exact wording, but that was the basic. You're not expelled, but motherfucker, get the fuck on for a little while. So I have, and so this is going back to what I was talking about luck. So I'm 19 at this point. I have 2 roommates. My share of the rent is $375. This includes cable. Only thing I got to cover outside of that is a $40 cell phone bill. I could work at Golden Corral twice a week and make that $375 and cover that for the month. Every other day that month was my own to do whatever I wanted to do with. So I would get on the Greyhound and go do comedy. I would just travel to open mics wherever the fuck they were in the South, and fucking I would get on Netscape Navigator, cause I'm old. Shout out to the old school shit. And I would travel and do stand up. I would take the bus up to Atlanta and go do Uptown and shit. Take the MARTA back to the Greyhound station. Take the Greyhound back. My bike chained up outside the Greyhound station. Ride that bitch back to Golden Corral. So that was the move for about 6 months. June comes, I go to sentencing. I figure I'm going to prison. My house is packed. I'm ready to go to prison. And motherfucker gave me probation. To this day, I can't tell you why. I don't. You know, just gave me probation.
Woke up on the right side of the bed that day. Wife gave him a blowjob or something. Like, literally could be, like, literally could be anything that completely changed your life.
Right. Sentencing so ironclad, my lawyer didn't even bother showing up for it. And then I call him. Yeah, bitch, I'm free. Oh. Huh? Call a motherfucker with some unexpected news.
No thanks to you.
Because
Right? No thanks to you, motherfucker.
I called him mad. So I guess he thought I was going to come fight him. But I'm like, bitch, I'm free. I'm not finna fuck up again. Fucking straight. So I'm still suspended from school, right? And so now I got my whole summer back to just fucking work the road. And I'm still $375 rent. So then I get back. I get reinstated back in school. So FAMU sends me another letter. All right, nigga, you can come back. You can come back to school, but you can't pledge no fraternity. It's I don't know what the type of probation it's called, but it was exactly what I needed at that time. But basically, you can't do shit but go to class. You can't even go to the cafeteria, my nigga. Go home. Go home. Are you on the meal plan? No. Good. Go home. Come to class. Get your degree and fucking no flag football. I get, like, people always ask me, why didn't you pledge no fraternity? Motherfucker, I couldn't. I was told to go home, and all of the frat activities are on campus, motherfucker. I am not getting expelled over some fucking learning how to step and stomp and like, I'm sorry, I'll learn that shit later. So all I do is go to class, but because I'm working the road regularly now, because I spent the whole year just working, now I'm a working MC in like five different states. So I stack my stand-up gigs Tuesday through Thursday. Thursday night, hop the Greyhound. Monday morning, Greyhound back, take a night class, take classes Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, work Golden Corral, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday night. My schedule was so tight, the only day I could study was Tuesday. I made the dean's list the rest of the time I was in school because it was just about efficiency. And so by the time I graduated, I say all of that to say, and this goes back to the original question of trusting yourself and betting on yourself. There was a lot of fucking focus and a lot of fucking luck. My mother, once I made Dean's List, my mom did not like me doing comedy, but she also did not like me sleeping in a bus station. So she put down on a Ford Focus for me. That was my first like real, real car. And what having a car did was take the Greyhound out the equation, so now I could go further. So now I was performing in like 8-9 states across the Southeast while I was a full-time student. And so when I got out of school, because all I did was stand up, I never did an internship. So I couldn't get no fucking job offers when I got out of college because I had no fucking experience other than the campus paper, which I was sneaking and doing because you ain't supposed to motherfucking be on campus, motherfucker. So I'm writing for the campus.
Damn Underground Railroad journalist and
bro.
Shit.
Bro, really real shit, right, bro. Real shit. I would type my fucking articles.
You a MassCom major?
Yeah. Say what?
You a MassCom major?
Yeah. Journalist, broadcast. So I would, but I was doing print and radio. I was interning at a radio station off campus because I couldn't even work at the campus radio station when I was back in school because nigga go home. So you still figure out ways to still hustle. But bro, I was writing articles for the campus paper at my house, putting them on floppy disks and passing them shits off to my fucking assignment editors. And it was getting run. So technically I still wrote for the campus paper. I was just never in the office. So you start figuring out these grifts and, you know, like, that's why, like, when you look at cats that hustle and cut corners, man, these motherfuckers, they know what they're doing. It's just misapplied purpose, you know? And so when I came out of school, I had essentially no job. I had two job offers. Both of them was paying like $12.5. I did the math on my stand-up money. At this point, I'm year three. It's 2001. I did the math, and I had, I figured I would make $17.5 that year doing stand-up. And so, well, there ain't no sense in fucking doing journalism. Nigga, I'm making more money telling jokes. So essentially those first two, three years of stand-up while I was in college, the suspension year and my junior, senior year, those 3 years, I basically, all of the broke nigga years that you have as a performer, I had, but I was insulated with roommates. I was insulated with a car that my mom was helping me make payments on. I was insulated with being able to focus on other stuff. I didn't have a family. I didn't have fucking kids. I wasn't out in the real world paying all of these goddamn bills. So it was easy for me to transition into stand-up right after I graduated because I just didn't have no expenses. And on top of that, I went back to Birmingham and lived with my mom for 2 years rent-free while I built all of that shit. And so I never stopped hustling, but I just didn't know what else to fucking do. This makes me happy. I'm not in jail. I make money doing it. So I'm not going to stop. And so there was never this thought of failure as this concept because this is better than that. And it still is. So just don't fuck this up. Work hard, make connections, don't fuck it up. And so every year, thankfully, since 1998 has been better than the year before. And so that's all I fucking had. So that's why, like, when a nigga over 30 with kids, be like, how I get started? I literally don't know what to tell you. Economically, I don't know how to tell you how to navigate this, because gas was $1.20 when I started, dog. You know, I,
what do you tell them niggas? Don't get started, nigga. You watch. Should have jumped off the
it's
truck.
It's time to focus on jazz, my
go
nigga.
Go be a dad, nigga. Go be a dad,
bro. Pick up that trombone, man.
Hit him with that guy from Street Fighter. Go home and be a family man.
Right.
I think that, which brings me back to the job fair thing, right? I think that if it's eating at you, it's always going to eat at you. So you have to give it a shot. You just have to figure out a way to be economic about it. I think the more important thing that niggas need over 30, no matter what it is, this isn't stand-up. This is just about pursuing whatever it is that's eating at you that you ain't tried to try yet. More important than money, you need people that are emotionally supportive. So you got to rebuild your circle. The biggest mistake I made, I had a lot of negative motherfuckers around me in my 20s, and I opened for a lot of OG comedians that were bitter and angry at the game, and that shit rubs off on you and you pick that shit up. So if you got people around you that don't believe in they self, they ain't gonna believe in you. And them niggas is a tax. They're a fucking tax on your soul, and you won't realize it until you're really trying to do something and somebody's trying to talk you out of it. Same thing goes for anybody you dating. You got to reprogram them. Look, I know you thought you was buying into this, but this is where I am now, and this is what I'm with. So I want to go pursue this. Yes, I know that I used to be a marijuana lobbyist, and that shit made us money. But I'm telling you, these gospel CDs.
CDs are coming back,
what
baby.
What a callback. What a callback. My nigga is really a comedian, no. Dog. That, hey, bro, what that was?
You've got to figure out the smart way of doing it. The thing that you cannot do, and this is what I try to tell, you know, younger, newer comics starting, it's just be careful about trying to recreate the footsteps of people you respect, because the game was different for them. You got to be a little bit ahead of the curve. You got to be on that Dane Cook put 30,000 on my MySpace page when nobody else was betting on MySpace type shit. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to figure out a way to find an audience and bring them to you. I would never tell anybody to move to New York or LA, but eventually you're going to need connections and you're going to need to be plugged in. And there's only so much you can do from Chicago or Atlanta. You know, you can make a way for yourself, but to me, all of that is AAA ball, which is a great place to work the muscle and learn the craft. But sooner or later, you got to be networking with people that are making shit happen. So just watch your circle.
The running theme on this show is we have funny people on, and then we end up becoming very inspired as part of the interview, man. That was a fucking testimony and a half, bro. Thank you so much for coming on. The legend. We really appreciate you, man. That was that's a crazy story.
that's my life, man. I mean, I'm blessed and lucky, man. I'm very lucky to be able to have found my passion at a very early age where failure wasn't going to be catastrophic to my life. And, you know, I think if you're past that point, you have to figure out ways to just juggle the two. But just trust yourself and don't listen to motherfuckers who don't believe in themselves. Any nigga who ain't told you they dreams, what the fuck they gonna tell you about yours? That's the first filter. Anybody in your circle who you know this motherfucker ain't told you shit about their hopes and dreams, fuck them. They gotta go.
You need a show, dog. You need a television, like a whole ass show about your life, bro. You know what I mean? Because jeans almost ruined you. Jeans.
Tommy, cross color jeans.
A pair of Tommy jeans away from being out of here,
Tommy, if I'd have caught the wrong judge on the wrong day, bro, I'd have been walking out of jail in 2002. With no college credits and owing student loans, and who knows where the fuck that would have put me. Lord knows I wouldn't have tried to do comedy then. Yeah. So, you know, you got to find it.
Thank God his wife was in a good mood that morning or whatever the fuck it was that led your path to be where it was. And thank you so much for coming on the show, man. Roy's Job
it's
Fair
all up,
podcast.
Man.
Check out everything else and support the homie. Thank you for coming on, bro.
Indeed. All right, y'all.
Sure. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man.